I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, March 14th. It's an interesting moment to be Gregory Meeks, from southeast Queens to the Poland-Ukraine border. The 24-year congressman, who will join us in just a minute, is from southeast Queens, as is Mayor Eric Adams, and as is City Council Speaker Adrian Adams. So Meeks is from the new epicenter of power in New York City. And as a member of Congress, he was elevated this term to the position of chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. And among his recent duties, that visit to near the war zone, the Poland-Ukraine border. This is all happening in an election year, too, when Meeks' Democratic Party is trying to hold their House and Senate majorities amid rising inflation and rising crime, but also a soaring job market and a pandemic that's receding, at least for now, under the Democrats' vaccination and other public health experts' efforts, only sometimes with bipartisan support. So it's an interesting time to be Congressman Gregory Meeks, who joins me now. Congressman, thanks for some time today with so much happening right now. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Can you start by telling us about your trip to the border area? When exactly were you there, and what specifically did you go to observe?
I was there just about a week ago. In fact, I returned a week ago, Monday. It was a visit to Poland, as you said, to support the defensive military efforts for Ukraine and to try to see what we could do to help alleviate some of the humanitarian crises there. We visited the border to see exactly what was happening at the border and wanted to leave a loud and clear message that the United States Congress, in a bipartisan way, was a bipartisan delegation, stands with our NATO allies. We had several meetings, beginning with the Polish foreign minister. We met with governors of both the Polish and Ukrainian border regions, right in the middle of the borders of the two countries. We met with Ukrainian refugees. We met with the Airborne Division 82, Polish volunteers, local civic leaders, Secretary Blinken, even the UNHCR High Commissioner, and of course, U.S. Embassy staff from both Kyiv and Warsaw. So it was a very timely and impactful trip that we made, and highly emotional for me, and I think the rest of the delegation, to see the number of refugees that were coming across the border, primarily women and children, who was hungry, cold, did not know what their future will be. Many leaving their husbands and fathers at the border because it was only basically women and children crossing. Men between ages of 18 and 60 could not cross. You saw a few elderly men, and that was the only ones that crossed over. So it was, hard to see, bringing many of us to tears. The flip side of that is the Polish people, many of them coming to volunteer, cooking food and having blankets and toys and other things for people that was crossing the border. Some offering the new immigrants coming across, new refugees, I should say, coming across, the opportunity to stay at their homes, trying to do what they could, but just overwhelmed. I would just, you know, when we arrived, they told me there were 700,000 individuals who had crossed the border. Just 2-3 days later, when we were leaving, they were up to 1.3. This is the fastest number of refugees taking place in Europe since World War II. And that's devastating.
Right. 1.3 million refugees at that point, and it's probably significantly more than that already. Let me follow up on a couple of things that you said in that answer. One was that your trip was intended in part to reaffirm that the U.S. will stand with Poland as a NATO ally. And then I want to come back to the refugees and the U.S. role in potentially taking people in, and even compare that to some of the other refugee situations in the world where it's so controversial in this country about taking people in. But on standing with Poland, we've seen the Russian airstrikes in recent days come ever closer to the Poland-Ukraine border. Do you have any reason to believe that Russia intends to attack inside Poland? And what do you think the proper U.S. response should be if that happens?
It's clear that Vladimir Putin is getting more desperate every day. That is absolutely clear. And as a result, he's trying to escalate. But should he do anything that's crossing that Poland border or any of our NATO allies, that is consequences I don't think that he wants to see. That would invoke Article 5 of the NATO treaty, which then basically, as the president has said, the United States has pledged to protect every inch of NATO soil, every inch. So crossing into Poland, any other country in the Baltics, any other NATO, fellow NATO nation, I think would reap Putin consequences that he really doesn't want to see, because he will defend every inch of NATO land.
Congressman, I see multiple news organizations reporting now that President Zelensky will address members of Congress on Wednesday morning. I assume that'll be a virtual address, like he addressed the British Parliament virtually the other day from wherever he is. What are you expecting? First of all, can you confirm that? And I imagine President Zelensky will continue lobbying for a no-fly zone, which the United States so far is saying no to, or allowing Polish MiG fighters to fly out of the U.S. NATO airbase in Germany, which the U.S. is also saying no to, so it doesn't actually become a party of the war, party to the war, and in a direct military confrontation sense. But do you know about Zelensky speaking to Congress on Wednesday? Is that happening? And what do you expect to hear from him?
Yeah, let me say, as you've indicated, I was in Poland when he spoke to members of Congress previously. I think it was last Saturday while we were in Poland. There was a broad, conversation he had with members, and he is doing another virtual conversation with members of Congress, as you correctly stated, on Wednesday. One of the things that I expect him to say, and to continue to say, that he'll say thank you for all of the weapons and defensive weapons that we've sent. As you know, another 200 million is going out. The president just announced that yesterday. We just passed a bill of close to $14 billion for both defensive lethal weapons to Ukraine, as well as to help with humanitarian relief. That we have continually, and from my visit to Poland and talking to General Donahue, that as soon as the items get in, they're getting out and getting into the hands of Ukrainian soldiers so that they can fight back. But I expect that President Zelensky, who I met with, I was in Ukraine about 5-6 days before the brutal assault that Putin started
I didn't know about that trip. Yeah.
Started upon Ukraine. And I had a chance to meet with President Zelensky in both trips with bipartisan delegations. And he was clearly resolved that the Ukrainian people will fight themselves. They did not need any American troops on the ground or boots on the ground. They just needed the equipment that they wanted, that they needed to defend themselves. And I expect him to still say the same message. And the issue will come up in regards to a no-fly zone. I'm sure that he's concerned about the air bombardment that he has been receiving and the ability to defend themselves by bringing some of those planes, those Russian planes, down. And they've knocked some of them down. There's been a big question with reference to the jets, the MiGs coming from Poland. The fact of the matter is, I thought while in Poland and talking to Secretary Blinken and a few others that there was a deal to be done, and we were close to getting a deal done. Now, I understand the president's decision in regards to the MiGs. Let me be clear. I thought the agreement was that what the Poles were asking, that if they sent or gave MiGs to Ukrainians, that the United States would backfill those planes with our own F-16s.
And I should say that Secretary Blinken himself was on TV shows, some of the Sunday talk shows a week ago yesterday, indicating the same thing, that we were going to do that. And then something changed to say no.
Yeah, what changed was the agreement was that the Ukrainian pilots would come to Poland and fly the jets back. Because not, you know, there would not be any United States pilots flying them there, nor any Polish flight, you know, so no one from NATO would do it. But what changed afterwards, and you know, there's various reasons. You know, I think that the Poles changed a bit, saying that they did not want the planes to leave from Polish soil, that they would be willing to take the planes to Germany and give them to the United States, putting the United States in the position of being the middleman to the United States than to either fly or hand them over to the Ukrainians. In this, the president fears, and a number of us fear, that that would only, you know, escalate things as well as possibly start, as the president said at our caucus, our conference, issues conference, you know, anything that we touch could create World War III. Because if, in fact, we were then flying those planes over into to give it to the Poles, or if someone was a plane was attacked over NATO territory in that regards, then Article 5 would kick in. And for all right. respects, we then would be in war. And
as the president said, Poland doesn't want to be seen by Russia as a direct party to the war by having the planes fly from there. And the U.S. doesn't want to be seen as a direct party to the war by having the planes first move to this U.S. air base in Germany and then flying into Ukraine from there. And there it's stuck. We have a caller coming in on the question of the planes. Let's take that for you. Fred in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Queens Congressman Gregory Meeks, chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Hi, Fred.
Hi. How are you doing? Regarding this MiG-29 situation, I'm just trying to see a comparison, and I would like to see the congressman's. How do you think Putin thinks about our administration? If Poland was going to send these MiG-29s and we backed down because we didn't want to be in direct confrontation, yet another NATO member, Turkey, has been supplying armed drones, including laser-guided missiles, to Ukraine to fight the Russians. And there doesn't seem to be a retaliation for that. So why? How does Putin think about the United States when we are not able to stand up in that way? I would have thought that we should have had these MiG-29s out there. And what does the congressman think? What goes in Putin's mind right now of our backing down after Secretary Blinken said we were going to do it?
Thank you, Fred.
Well, I'll answer that this. Putin is panicking now. That's why Putin... you know, because of all that we've sent to Ukraine to for them to defend themselves, all of the tanks that have been destroyed and a number of planes have been destroyed. The fact of the matter is there are other items that we are looking to give to Ukraine that will be able to reach the planes. I mean, part of the problems with some of the equipment that they have is the planes are now flying higher. And you need the artillery to defend yourself that can hit the planes at a higher altitude. I think that there's something that's in process there that then does not technically break the guidelines of NATO actually being involved as far as physical manufacturing. physically, not manufacturing, physically carrying it over. Like the Turks, what they do, they're not, they are giving some of the equipment as we have been, and we have been in the forefront of organizing countries around the world to get certain materials to the Ukrainians. But be clear, the only ones that are fighting the war thus far is the Ukrainians themselves. They have said they don't want Turkish soldiers or any NATO boots on the ground. We give them the resources that they need, and they are able then to utilize their army to fight this war. And Putin realizes it, and that's why, you know, we're in day, I think it's 18 or 19 now, where he thought, as well as some of our intelligence thought initially, that it would only take 3 days to overwhelm them. While we have these crushing sanctions that's also on them, that's crushing and hurting the people and the economy in a devastating way. And so the fighting is really still taking place. And I would add that nothing is off the table. And for me, you know, I want to make sure, and they know that nothing is off the table. So our Department of Defense is still looking and working on the best way that we can help the Ukrainians to defend their skies. So there's some things that I know that's taking place that as of this moment are classified, but we are focused also in trying to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to help Ukraine defend its skies. So we're not saying we're not, you know, but there's mechanisms of which to get it done.
Let me ask you, what about the refugees and what the U.S. is doing to accept any of them from Ukraine who are flooding mostly into Poland, into that zone you visited that you described as such a humanitarian crisis? What's the U.S. role in actually taking people in?
Yeah, I know that in a bipartisan way, I've had a conversation with the ranking lead Republican on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and we're talking, and other members are talking on, you know, setting up procedures, particularly where some of the refugees have family members or others that they know in the United States, where they can come here to the United States. So that's a conversation that is ongoing right now in Congress, because we know that the borders of Poland and Romania and others are going to be, and not already full. And so we've got to figure out ways that we can bring other refugees in various other countries, including the United States.
Is there a number? Should we be talking about taking in X number of refugees? We know that was such a debate during the Syrian refugee crisis, which of course is ongoing, but when that was newer about a decade ago and President Obama was increasing the number of refugees by tens of thousands that the U.S. was willing to accept. And then President Trump, who is of course so anti-migration to the United States in general, cut it way, 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 way down. Should we be talking about numbers here?
Well, I think that negotiations are going on, because to get it done, we got to do this in a bipartisan way. For my part, it's got to be, you know, our fair share that we should be looking at. And so I think a number probably will be debated and looked at. And that's part of the conversations that are ongoing now. We need to make sure that we do that, and we have that debate and that conversation. I anticipate it to be ongoing this week.
But you don't have a number that you're in favor of, anything that you would state right now?
No, because we were in negotiation. I'm not going to negotiate that, you know, over
in the press,
radio. But I'm going to continually talk to my colleagues and try to come up with something that we can all mutually agree upon.
One question by way of counterpoint to that, and then I want to finish up with a couple of quick domestic issue questions before you go. I see that you also traveled as chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee to several countries in Africa recently. And as you know, many of the world's refugees are from there as well, but we don't see them making the news as much in this country or promoting as much of a, or prompting, I should say, as much of a national outpouring of support. I realize different situations are different, but do you see elements of racism in the U.S. response, pro-Ukrainian refugee, as opposed to more skeptical about those from conflicts in Central Africa, or maybe more relevant to this country, from Syria and Yemen and Central America?
I've always been an advocate for individuals in those conflicts to be able to come here. I was opposed to, of course, the restrictions that was placed on the number of refugees that came in via the Syria and other African conflicts. I think that there's a process. This is one of the reasons why I also believe that there should be, and I've been a long advocate from the time that I've been in the United States Congress for immigration reform. People are fleeing for their lives, and we're supposed to be the land of the free and the home of the brave. We are a country of immigrants in that regard. So I've long have been one to believe that we've not done our fair share, and I urge and support a better and stronger policy of those that are fleeing from anywhere around the world for opportunities. There's procedures that are set up. They should be allowed to come in and show that they are individuals who are fleeing for their lives, and our procedures should be open to give them that opportunity. Unfortunately, I can't get, or we can't get a number of the appropriate votes so that we can finally do a comprehensive immigration reform bill that we should also include in regards to how and who we allow in the country under refugee status.
Congressman Gregory Meeks, Chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Congressman from Southeast Queens, thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate when you come on.
Always good to be with you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.